Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
All right, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online, your online wagering experts. Today, we're going to continue our series of potential playoff preview for the Houston Rockets, and I'm going to sit down with Tomer Azarli, who covers the Los Angeles Clippers for Clutch Points, to discuss a potential Rocket series with the Clippers, which would happen if they defeat the Nuggets, if the playoff standings were to freeze as of this moment, and if the season were to start today. All right, let's get into it.
Blue Wire. Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going
to
be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the freeway.
All right, we're back with Tomer. Tomer, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Salman. Thank you. I'm good. Trying to survive this self-quarantine, self-isolation time.
You know, I thought I could survive this, and because, you know, I'm really an introverted guy. I'm a homebody. I like staying at home. My ideal vacation is no vacation. Like that's my kind of thing. And, you know, I stuck to a schedule. I was doing great. I was like, all these people complaining, I thought these guys are all wusses. Like, I'll be able to handle this much better than everybody else. And then yesterday I hit my breaking point because it rained in Houston, and I like to wake up every day, and I like to go on a long walk, and when it didn't rain, I was just like, I have to get the hell out of this house, and I was just there for 6 hours, just like, anxious as hell, didn't know what to do, and I, as reporters, we kind of take for granted what our jobs allow us to do, you know, get out in the open, go to games for free, do our jobs. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those moments where I'm like, man, I'm so freaking lucky. And I took all that for granted.
I knew it would be a major difference in that, you know, obviously there's no sports, but there's no, you know, I think we talk a lot about players having routines, but I think as reporters and beat writers, we also have our routines. Like, we get up, we may go to shoot around, may grab a meal real quick. We'll go home, get some work done, get to the arena early, get there for the, you know, the coaches press conference, the locker room opening, the sort of the on-court shooting. We prep our stuff for the game. So I think, you know, and then even after the game, we have our whole routines down. You know, I leave to the media room like 2 minutes left in the quarter just to make it back before the mess happens, especially at Staples Center when it gets crazy. And so, yeah, all of it is just sort of thrown out of whack, and you realize like now there's like really nothing, and you just have to fill the time with other stuff like your own walks or Call of Duty or watching 2K tournaments. I mean, it's a drastic change. It really is. It's way harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where like you're 100% right about the routines, man. Like I never related to you more than when you mentioned leaving the game 2 minutes early to get back before it becomes a mess in the media room.
But always,
yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, and all that's thrown out of whack, and you know, it's starting to get scary because you read these columns about how in 2 to 3 months you're going to get a lot of people with more anxiety issues, more, you know, mental health problems, and mm-hmm. You know, that's really scary. Like, there's going to be a new wave of people that just don't know how to function because they were cooped up inside their house for so long. Not to mention all the financial burden that some people have to go through right now. I mean, the restaurant industry is taking a beating. Like, some of these awesome restaurants mm-hmm. that we take for granted, they're just not going to be there in a couple months. They're just going to be gone. And that's what's so sad about this.
It's crazy to think about. A lot of these sort of small businesses that you might know, you know, your friends recommended it to you via word of mouth, and then you ended up there. I know there's a couple out here in LA alone that have been closed down, and I've been dying to go to, but obviously you can't the last couple months or weeks. And you just wonder, can some of those survive? And that's only a small part of the small businesses that we're talking about. I mean, there's so many others out there that we haven't even talked about from, you know, I can't even begin to name them. There's so many in terms of maybe like appliance stores or little hardware stores, all these sort of mom and pop shops, bagel stores. Just there's so many things that'll be affected. And, yeah, I think this is probably the one thing that has affected I mean, in my lifetime, has affected everything at one time in terms of just the complete shutdown of everything. Like, you know, there's no parks. I don't know if you've seen, but some of the rims around cities have been taken out, basketball rims, so you can't shoot around anymore. You can't even park in some places. So it's just they're telling you stay home unless you absolutely have to. So it's shocking to see. Like, I live on a sort of busy street, and last couple of weeks have been dead silent. And it's just like, what is going on, dude? This is weird.
It is weird. I walked by a playground the other day, and it was surrounded by security tape. And, you know, and before when I first saw it, I was like, that doesn't make sense. But then you think about it, and you think about the amount of kids that, you know, are on these hard surfaces that could potentially be carrying this virus, and it makes total sense. Like, you don't want a playground is the last place you want a kid to be right now, especially, you know, it's not just one kid there at the same time. You're going to get other kids congregating on this playground. And you have all these hard surfaces, you have all these kids next to each other, you know, if somebody sneezes, you know, that's just, you're just asking to spread the virus around like wildfire. And it's very scary, it's very nerve-wracking. We all want this to be over, but I mean, we recognize that this is the right thing to do. But yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. All of our routines are thrown out of whack. And that leads me to, you know, the subject of our conversation today, which is Rockets Clippers, a potential playoff series. And I've been kind of playing this parlor game, asking people, you know, in media, in the league, you know, do you expect there to be an NBA playoffs this year? And, you know, you kind of get a mixed bag of responses, but I would weight it probably 70% no, 30% yes. Where are you on that question right now?
You know, I'd been optimistic for a while, just because, for example, June seems like so far away right now. Even May seems like just so far away. And I at first thought, like, obviously there's not going to be any fans if the NBA does return this year. There's no way you can have fans again this year. And I'm sort of starting to get a little pessimistic towards it's not going to come back. I did think it would come back, but it's too hard. I think if you, obviously there's a lot of playoff money involved in this, but when you talk about not only impacting this season, but impacting the start of next season and
that's
all that,
because
we've
thing,
heard
right?
players,
yeah.
we've heard players simply say, we don't want to start around Christmas. We don't want to start around Christmas. We don't want to have our vacation in like November or, December, October, excuse me. We don't want anything like that. They don't want to change up their routines like they usually have throughout the year. So if that's the case, and it sounds like it is, I mean, what option do you have other than to just say, you know what, it sucks. It's not the easiest decision, but we have to just toss out the rest of the season and start anew, hopefully, if everything's good, in training camp in early October, and then probably start the season in late October. Again, that'll probably be without fans, too. I don't anticipate there being any fans for that. But yeah, I'm starting to think that the NBA will not be back this season, which is... It couldn't have picked this. Couldn't have become at the worst time for the NBA because, obviously, there are more important things like lives at stake and just all around the world. But I think this is the first year that NBA has had legitimate excitement, and for me personally, in maybe 4 or 5 years. I mean, when LeBron and the Cavs won, I think that was kind of exciting in 2016, but not really all that surprising. Obviously, KD joined the Warriors, and then it was kind of like, all right, we already know what's going to happen. But now it's just like you had so many contenders in the Clippers, the Lakers, the Bucks, even the Raptors were making some noise. The Rockets made a move at the deadline to just go small ball, and it's like a 2K thing. And I think I was really looking forward to seeing how all of it played out in both conferences, and it's a shame that we really don't get to see it.
Yeah, this season in general has just had like this dark cloud that won't go away. And it started with the China stuff in the offseason. And then quickly it went to David Stern passing away due to the brain hemorrhage. And then obviously Kobe Bryant and that tragic helicopter crash, which killed his daughter and 7 other people. And, you know, now you have this. And it's just like, you know, part of you wants this season to end, right? Like, part of you wants this season to just go away so we can all forget about it. But the other part, you know, is what you mentioned. Like, this playoff race is going to be one of the more exciting, refreshing playoff races we've had since 2014. You know, the last time I remembered there being a true playoff race where there wasn't really a favorite. And this was going to be one of those playoff races. You know, the Bucks and Lakers were obviously shaping up as probably the favorites in each conference, but I don't think anybody had them down as written in Sharpie at all, right? Like, I think it was getting pretty clear that we were going to have a really, really exciting playoffs. And, you know, I don't want to completely write it away, because there is a non-zero chance that they figure this out. They, you know, they get together in MGM or someplace in Vegas or the Bahamas or whatever, and, you know, isolate everyone and get a tournament. The logistics of that would be really complicated and difficult, but the NBA is trying everything they can to save this playoff revenue. But it's looking pretty dark today, is what I'll say.
Well, the ratings are obviously something that would be off the charts if the NBA were to return, because right now we have no sports in general. This is probably the first time my lifetime that there have been no sports, period. I mean, there's usually always baseball or hockey or NBA or NFL or something. For there to just be nothing is just incredible. So the ratings would be off the charts if the NBA does decide to return, but That would just be so complicated. You mentioned the logistics of it, of playing. Like, I heard, you know, Austin Rivers was saying potentially playing in the Thomas and Mack Center, which is right next to the Cox Pavilion. If you've been to Summer League, two are sort of right next to one another. And that would be a convenient place, but also it's just, what would it be like a college style where their team lined up waiting to warm up once the game is over? You know, players leave and then these next two teams come up, warm up for like 10 minutes, and then they start playing. Again, all this without fans. It just sounds really weird, and maybe that is the only way to go, and players just have to live with it. Because if it does save the season and bring in some revenue, some playoff money, I don't think anyone would be against it. Players have also said, you know, aside from not starting the season early next year, that they absolutely want to finish this year, no matter if they're in the playoffs or out of the playoffs, whatever. They want to finish the season. They want a chance to just close out the way they want to. So there's just so many factors going into this, and I don't even know where you start. I can't imagine what those meetings are like every single day, or those phone calls are like every single day. But there's definitely talks behind the scenes going on every minute about how to bring this back.
Yeah, and you know, that doesn't even get into the, you know, what classifies as essential personnel in that case. Is that just the head coach? Is that the entire staff? Does that include medical? Does that include all the trainers? Like, you know, and then you classify it down to team personnel and front office guys. Like who gets to go to this thing? Is it just, you know, the 20 players on the court? Like who classifies as essential personnel for this? And it gets even more complicated then. And then you even get into the timing. Like, when does this actually happen? Like, are we going to be good in June? Like, is this thing going to die down soon? Is there going to be a second wave? You know, you hear Dr. Fauci talking about how...
I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, right. I think that's the biggest thing right there you mentioned. But I think Hong Kong is going through a second wave right now where they've started to close things down as well because they're experiencing it. And then if that happens here where they sort of open these back up and let people go back to normal, at least for a bit, and there is a second wave of, you know, asymptomatic carriers who don't know that they're spreading it, I mean, we could be looking at it like a December sort of shutdown. It could be bad. I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah, it could be bad if that second wave does exist.
No, I'm glad you mentioned Hong Kong, because they actually tried opening up their CBA, and you know, as you know, that didn't work out. Like they can't continue because of the second wave, and when the weather gets colder, like this thing may just start back up again, and that's really, really scary, because then you're talking about potentially impacting next season. And, you know, I think the uncomfortable subject that nobody really wants to talk about in terms of the NBA is that the cleanest solution may just be cancel the season. Like, the cleanest schedule, impact-wise solution may just be canceling the season. It's the most painful in terms of revenue, but, I mean, it's just the easiest way. You have all these front offices who have made these decisions to revolve around this season, and all that goes out the window, and... we don't get to see what happens to the playoffs. You know, what happens with the Sixers? What happens with the Rockets with Mike D'Antoni on a contract here? You know, all these little storylines that everybody talked about going to the playoffs, all that gets put on pause, and we have to go towards next season. It makes it harder, but it might be the easiest way to go about things.
I mean, one of the things that, I mean, again, this is also down the line, once you decide to cancel the season or bring back the season, whatever, obviously playoff money is a big part of, you know, team salary caps next year. And I know, you know, if we're looking at no final month of the season, no playoffs, salary cap is going to be a lot lower than expected. Teams who thought that they had salary cap space are they in the luxury now? Like, what are we looking at there? Like, I, for example, Montrezl Harrell for the Clippers. That was a big storyline for me. I mean, it's again, there are bigger things in the world right now. But just if you look at the Clippers, you know, he had a couple options, I believe, in free agency with teams who had money. And now you're just like, well, what happens now? What's each player's value with a lower salary cap if that does happen? But what happens to free agents? There's just so many questions. I don't even know where you start with this. It's, and again, if they do start a backup and there's a second wave, does that affect the start of next season? I would think it does.
Yeah, so. And that doesn't even get into the force majeure part of everyone's contract, right? And players potentially having to give up money for this season. And, you know, how that impacts salary cap. And, you know, if the salary cap does lower, like, you know, are there going to be creative solutions here? Are we going to potentially discuss luxury tax forgiveness for owners? Because, you know, like, this is the kind of talks that happen behind closed doors when there's not really an easy solution here, right? Like, this is where you have to get creative. And, you know, I don't know, but we are getting way ahead of ourselves. Let's assume there is a playoffs. Currently, okay. The Rockets are slated to play the Nuggets, and if they win that series, they will likely, if the Clippers win their first round matchup, play the Clippers in the second round. If the solution is to freeze the standings and go straight to the playoffs, we are probably going to get Rockets, Clippers in the second round. No disrespect to the Nuggets. I'm just assuming that's going to be a tough series, but the Rockets ultimately end up on top. Is that kind of where you see things right now?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at the standings right now, the Clippers would face the Dallas Mavericks right now. And
which would be fun.
The Clippers have matched up. Yeah, I mean, it would be really fun. I would love to watch 5, 6, 7 games of Luka. I don't think it would get to 7 games. I don't think it would get to 6 either, because I think the Clippers have had a good sort of a slew of guys they could throw at Luka. So I would expect that to be like, I've said this in other pods, probably like a 5-game series, maybe 6. I just don't see it. I know Porzingis presents some matchup issues as well, especially with his shooting, but I just think that the Clippers are too good to go that far into a series with the Mavericks. It'd be 5 games, maybe 6, which would set him up with the Rockets in the second round, which would be interesting.
It would be interesting. So I think this series may potentially be, you know, everybody's excited about Clippers Lakers, right? That's the hot ticket right now for the playoffs this year. And I do think that may be the most interesting series on the table. But this might be top 3. You know, Rockets Clippers, there's a lot of history between these two teams. Like, you're talking Beverly and Russ, Doc Rivers and Austin Rivers, the Chris Paul trade. Half of the Clippers crunch time lineup used to be, you know, former Houston Rockets. You know, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley. You have the tunnel gate stuff from 2 years ago. Like, there's just so much to sink your teeth into.
Which Austin Rivers started, I believe. He started that by yapping at Trevor Reese on the bench, though.
So. Yeah.
The culprit, the starter, is on the bench, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of different storylines there. I don't know. I like the matchup sort of for both teams. I think the Rockets have, well, not so much for the Rockets. I think the Clippers have the sort of length that you would need to defend the Rockets. Like, I think that would be a really fun series just because of the Rockets' ability to go small, five out, and that brings out the best in Russell Westbrook. I don't know what that would look like in a playoff series because, you know, there's fewer transition buckets. The game slows down. It's more of a half-court game, and that's where the Clippers are really good. I don't have the Rockets' half-court numbers in front of me, but the Clippers have been a terrific half-court team all year. So I wonder how that series would look with the Rockets. You know, we saw a glimpse of them when both teams were sort of healthy. I think it was like a week before the season, the season canceled. I think it was March 5th or something like that, on Thursday in Houston. Yeah. The Clippers won that one 120-105. That was the first time the Clippers...
Wasn't pretty.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty on the Rockets side. Yeah, I think the Rockets shot what? They shot 7-42 from 3. And so, like, you know, if you watch that game, they were probably, I would say, 10 threes the Rockets probably should have made at least. They were wide open at least. And so you're talking about a different game then. I think the Clippers match up really well against the Rockets. And they have wings that can rebound. I think that's the biggest thing. Kawhi Leonard can averages 8, can give you 12 rebounds a game. Marcus Morris averages about 6 or 7, can give you 10, 11 a game. Patrick Beverley is one of the best rebounding guards right there with Russell Westbrook. Paul George, again, averages about 6 to 7 a game, can also give you 11 to 12. And we haven't even talked about Zubat and Montrezl Harrell, who can do their damage on the offensive glass as well. So I personally think the Rockets, the Clippers are probably a team the Rockets wouldn't want to see if they had to choose, but it'd be a really fun matchup for us to watch.
Yeah, and here's what I'll say. Like, before the season, and I don't want to give up too much, but before the season, I had the Clippers win the NBA title. And I'm still kind of there. And, you know, because I just love the depth of this team. This team is just so versatile on both ends of the floor. Defensively, they have so much length. Offensively, not to mention the floor spacing. They just have so many good quality creators on the floor at all times. But I feel like a lot of people overlook the Rockets in this series, in that I don't think the Rockets will win, and I don't want to lead too much ahead, because we're going to do predictions at the end of this. I don't think the Rockets would win, but I think most people would have the Clippers winning this in a 5-6 game series, and I think this is closer to a 6-7 game series, and I think most people would give it credit for, if that makes sense, because I think
right it does.
I just think, when you look at what the Rockets did at the trade deadline, I think before that move, I don't think the Rockets had two quality defenders to throw at the Clippers. And now I think, you know, with Robert Covington in the fold, I think they finally have two quality perimeter defenders to throw at Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And I don't think they had that before. I was a little, you know, the key question here was always Daniel House. And we'll get into Daniel House later. And I was always a little shaky on whether or not he could be that guy. But I know Robert Covington can be that guy. And I think they've closed the gap a little bit. I don't want to put too much weight into that last game. I think these two teams are a little bit closer than that last game predicted. But yeah, I mean, I think this would be a closer series than I think most people would give credit for, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I don't think that last game is indicative of what we could see. The Rockets are not going to shoot 7 of 42 in a game against the Clippers. I mean, if you watch that game, like, yeah, it's 7 of 42, but they missed easily, I want to say, like 15, maybe 17 open threes, like just wide open. And I just don't see that happening from the Rockets again. Like, you look at that game alone, what was it? Robert Covington 0 of 3, James Harden 0 of 8. McLemore has been shooting lights out this year, 0 for 3. House 1 of 5. So it's just, that's not going to happen again. I will say, though, that one of the things that makes me lean towards the Clipper side a bit is the Clint Capela trade, because before when he was on the Rockets, he was destroying the Clippers. He was too big for Montrezl Harrell to deal with, and too fast for Vita Zubas to deal with. And so last year he averaged 20 points, 12 rebounds against him. This year, he averaged 15 points, 16 rebounds against them. So he was doing damage against them, into two blocks a game as well. He was doing a lot of damage against them, and I think that's where the Rockets had the advantage, in Clint Capela. Now, it wasn't ideal for Russell Westbrook because he wasn't shooting that well. So you have their new style of offense now. But that's sort of what I looked at when they traded Capela, is that arguably, like, a Clipper killer was sort of off a team that they were contending against. And I don't know how much that's being talked about, because Capela, really, if you watch the games, he really did a number on the Clippers on the offensive and defensive glass.
No, 100%. And this was going to be my next question, how that trade affects how we view the series. And I think, you know, you talk about micro ball being really effective for the Rockets since they made that move. And I think there are two teams in the NBA that can match micro ball and probably do it better. And it's the Clippers and it's the Celtics. And the Rockets have played pretty well against the Celtics. I think the Clippers are the team that, you know, you talk about a lineup of Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, you know, now Marcus Morris at center, and Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams. Like, they can throw out a five-man unit that matches up with Houston's five-man unit at micro ball and probably do it better. And that to me is, like, the biggest reason I would probably pick the Clippers in this series. And also, I just think, yes, the Rockets gained that spacing advantage with having Covington in place for Clint Capela. But as you mentioned, Clint Capela was a big, you know, pain in the for the Clippers, and he was for a lot of teams.
It really was.
Yeah, and he was for a lot of teams. Like, the Rockets, you know, I've heard Matt Moore say this, and I keep saying it on this podcast, the Rockets raised their ceiling with that trade, but probably lowered their floor. And I don't know. I really don't know how that looks for a seven game series, because we only got one game of it. I want to see seven games of it. I really hope we get a postseason this year.
I hope so. It would have been fun. I think, yeah, to your point, just the size and the number of guys who can make something happen on the Clippers. The Celtics are probably the only other team I would guess that the Rockets, you know, if they meet, obviously it would be in the finals. And that's the team that can give them trouble. The Clippers and the Celtics, just in terms of their ability to mix and match guys. We haven't even talked a bit about, you know, Reggie Jackson and the new improved Clippers bench. Since adding Reggie Jackson, Lou Williams has been shooting, like, I want to say 50% from the field and like 52 from three. So the workload on him has gone down. His percentages are all up. He's playing a lot better, or he was playing a lot better. And so I think, you know, that second unit with Reggie, with Lou and Montrezl Harrell, could have made some noise too. I mean, in that Rockets game, again, not to take too much from it, but the Rockets struggled to defend it. A lot of it had to do with their own offensive woes, not making shots, but they struggled to defend on defense. So, if we do get a playoffs this year, I think I would really want to see Clippers Rockets, just for the storylines alone. I know Pat would be beside himself to play the Rockets again, against James Harden, against Russell Westbrook, who says, what did he say? He don't do nothing. He trick y'all. Pat Bev trick y'all.
Yeah, that's so, what he said.
Pat was well aware of all that. I think if there were two teams, he said at the beginning of the season, sort of in the locker room, we were just walking around, and he said Nuggets and Rockets, two teams he kind of wants to see in the playoffs. So I'm sure the storylines there would be astronomical. I mean, it'd be a writer's heaven for you and me.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on, or let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack. All open 24 hours a day and all online, including their $750,000 poker series. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, or even the weather. Visit their website and join today and receive a 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, all caps. Bet online, your online wagering experts. Yeah, and Patrick Beverley in the Toyota Center again. Like, if you're talking about a player that's comfortable playing in that environment, it's Patrick Beverley. Yeah.
Would they boo him? Would Rockets fans boo him?
I think they would cheer him in the intro, but I think, you know, once you get to the games, I think, you know, Rockets fans have quickly changed, you know, their devotions to Russell Westbrook. I mean, that's just natural, right? That's just natural fan stuff.
Right. Yeah, but he had a lot of his antics done at home in front of that crowd who backed him up. You know, I've really, not to just cut you off there, but you really see the impact he has on a crowd in terms of his ability to just, it could be dead in the arena and he'll deflect one ball and just get the crowd on their feet instantly. I've never seen another player do it like that. It's so easy for him. And I'm sure he would have a lot of fun with the Houston crowd.
Yeah, the only player that you can really compare to that is like maybe Marcus Smart. Like Marcus Smart has that kind of ability you're talking about, yes, in terms of really, yes, getting a crowd out going for, yes, you know, a charge, a steal, that kind of hustle play. Like Patrick Beverley has that kind of ability, and that's something the Rockets, you know, really missed since the Chris Paul trade. But obviously the Rockets do not regret that Chris Paul trade. You know, getting that close to winning an NBA title, I don't think they'll take that away. But let's talk about X factors in the series. So if you had to name one player, thing, something on the court that you want to see, or an X factor that will flip the series for you one way or the other, what would it be?
Oof. Given both teams' play styles, I would say it's Ivica Zubats. If he can stay on the floor and not get run off the court, he would give the Rockets so many fits, I feel like. Because Montrezl Harrell is going to get his 25 to 30 minutes a game. But if you can get the starting unit with Ivica Zubats to do damage on the defensive glass, on the offensive glass, I think that would be huge, because then the Rockets are not a great rebounding team as it is. I think they, that one game, they got out rebounded by 21. They had a couple games before that I know as well, like against the Knicks and all that. They got a rebound by like 30, I believe it was, or 25, 30. And so if Ivica Zubats can control the paint, control the boards, not get worked out of the game, I think that would be huge for the Clippers. Now Montrezl Harrell can hold his own as well. That's not to say he can't, but he's more of an offensive weapon for the team. You know, when they're shorthanded, they play a lot of Montrezl Harrell, but when they're at full health, Ivica Zubac played more because they have a lot of offense around him. So I think, yeah, Ivica Zubac would be my sort of X factor on the Clippers side.
No, that's a good pick. And that's kind of the dirty little secret about microball. It's really intended to play guys like Ivica Zubac off the court. And in that last game, Zubac, you know, he wasn't played off. Like, he played really, really well defensively against the Rockets. They tried really hard to get him on switches, and Zubac did really, really well. And, like, if that happens in a playoff series, like, that advantage that you've gained, it's negated significantly. Because if Zubac is playable in this series, you've lost. You've lost the whole point of this, right? I mean, obviously, Covington helps you against Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, but the main reason you did this trade is for the offensive benefits of having floor spacing and switchable guys. And like, if you can't play Ivica Zubac off the floor, you've lost the battle. That's a good one. My player as an X factor in this series is Daniel House, because before that Clint Capela trade, I said I really want to see how Daniel House fares in a lineup against in Houston's crunch time lineup against the Clippers, because I think that's really the difference maker. If you can get him to play competent defense and shoot at a 35-40% clip and do the things that Daniel House has done all season against the Clippers in a playoff series, you know, people forget Daniel House didn't play for the Rockets last year in the playoffs. Like, he could not play. He was not good enough. He had the injury too, to be fair. But if he can play in a Clippers series, like, I think Houston's best lineup against most teams in the NBA includes Eric Gordon. But I think against the Clippers, I think if you were to give the Rockets some truth serum, I think they would prefer Daniel House. Because then you're talking about a lineup of Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Robert Covington, Daniel House, and PJ Tucker. Like, three switchable wings that you can play on the floor at all times against that Clippers team, that's what you want, right? Like, that, like, if Daniel House is playing at a good enough level to where he can be that third switchable wing, you're talking about a defense that is much, much more sustainable against a team like this.
Yeah, I agree with that, because when you look at PJ Tucker, you know what you're going to get with him, whether his offense is going or not. When you look at Robert Covington, same thing, you know what you're going to get. And then everyone on the bench, I don't think they play enough to the point where you can rely on them much. But Daniel House has really taken his game. Like, I've been watching him. You know, I play a lot of fantasy basketball, so I've been watching a lot of what he's doing on the court. And he's a guy who can give you a lot of rebounding as well, a bit of size on the court. And so if you can get him, like you said, to shoot about 35-40% and play decent, not even great, just decent defense, it changes your team, because you have a lot of switchability defensively between Covington, Tucker, House, even Harden. You can't really bully ball him in the post anymore. He's really good post defender. They have a lot of switchability there. And so Daniel House is a guy you really have to look at as their X factor in a playoff series. I agree.
Yeah, and when you talk about that ability to guard post players with Harden and you know, even with Russ at points, like, that really comes into play when you're talking about Kawhi Leonard, because Kawhi Leonard loves that mid-post play. And if you're talking about Harden getting switched onto that, I don't think the Rockets would hate that matchup. Like, I think they would prefer PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, or even Daniel House. But I don't think, you know, if it came down to it and the Clippers were targeting that matchup, I don't think they would hate the point per possession spread they get on it. I would like to see that for a 7-game series, to see what kind of damage Kawhi could do on Harden in that kind of situation.
Yeah, again, I don't think you can just go to a guy. Like, obviously, Kawhi in the post is a good offensive option.
It is.
But if you're looking at everyone on the Clippers, if it's not PJ Tucker, Covington, I mean, I think you can live with Harden, because he's got a big frame. What is he, 6'5", 6'6", something like that?
6'5".
He's got a nice build for a guard, and he's able to sort of handle his zone in the post. So yeah, I don't think it'd be ideal for the Clippers, but it's probably the one you want to target if it's not Westbrook, for example. But yeah, I mean, the Clippers don't have a lot of guys who bully ball outside of Montrezl Harrell. A lot of them are sort of crafty and try to get around you and under you and over you, stuff like that. They don't really try to go through you outside of Montrezl Harrell. So I'd be curious to see how they navigate, you know, being defended by Tucker, Covington, and Harden.
And to be clear, like, the Rockets are going to lose the rebounding battle in this series. Like, I don't think that's even a question. Like, that's done. Like, they've given that up. And that kind of leads me to this, my next question, which is, what's the most important stat for this series in your opinion and why? And I think the Rockets have already foregone the rebounding battle. I think that, therefore, the most important stat for them becomes turnovers. Because these two teams are kind of the exact opposite of each other in terms of their play type on offense. The Clippers still run a ton of pick and roll with their ball handlers. It's 22.4% of their possessions, which is fifth in the league. The Rockets hardly run any pick and roll anymore, which is partly because of the way teams defend them. Like, they're dead last at 10.3%. And Houston loves to isolate. And I think, you know, right now they're at 20%, which is first in the league. The Clippers are at 6.8%. So they isolate almost three times as much as the Clippers. And I have a feeling that the game plan for Houston in this series will be to get a bunch of deflections and steals and force the Clippers to play in that isolation mold and, you know, play to them where they're least comfortable. And I think defensively that's what they would want. And if they can get those turnovers, they get that. If they don't get those turnovers, you're not moving the Clippers out of their preferred play style.
I think, yeah, given the Rocket style of play, I would say turnovers is important for them. It might be like an advanced stat. It might be as simple as just like assists and passing, the number of passes in a game. Because the Clippers have had games where they sort of just get into like a one-on-one scenario where, you know, Kawhi is talented enough to take guys one-on-one. Marcus Morris did it in New York. Montrezl Harrell can do it. Lou Williams can do it. Paul George can do it. That's four or five guys right there who can all take it one-on-one. But I think the Clippers have been most effective and most unbeatable when they just move the ball and get everything going. Run their sets smoother, really set their picks, not just those soft picks to be there, but really set a pick, create some space for the guy coming off the screen, and just ball moving and assist. I think if the ball's moving and the ball's hopping, that is going to be an important factor there. Doc Rivers has always talked about, the way he knows the ball is moving and moving well is when you look at Landry Shamet's shot attempts. Landry Shamet is a guy who really comes off screens hard all the time, similar to like a J.J. Redick or a Steph Curry style. Not at that level, but similar to it. And so when he's taking one or two shots a game, that shows you that the ball's not moving that well. He's not getting very many looks. Whereas he's had games where he's gotten a lot of looks, and you look at their passing numbers, their assist numbers, and they're way up. So that's one indicator to how the ball's moving. Excuse me. So I would say assists and sort of passing is really important for the Clippers, just to not to get too comfortable in isolation basketball and play collectively, play as a unit, if that makes sense.
No, it's funny, and like that, it works in opposite ways, right? Because the Rockets want the Clippers to play in that isolation style. Therefore, their most important stat is turnovers. And the Clippers don't want that. And therefore, their most important stat is assists. That's funny. I mean, it makes perfect sense both ways. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not going to say the Clippers are dead in the water by any means in isolation. Like, they have a ton of good isolation players. Like, they have always, obviously, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Lou Williams. Like, they have a lot of really, really good one-on-one players. I'm not sure if I would put Marcus Morris in that category.
No, I mean, he wasn't comfortable great, there, but yeah. In New York, he was doing a lot of that, and he hasn't really done it well in L.A., but I'm sure he could. Like, we saw against the Rockets, he got very comfortable from the mid-range and just started firing away. And those are shots that'll sort of like make you go, okay, what are you doing? Come on now. So,
No, I 100% get what you're saying. What's a matchup you want to keep your eye on for this series? So I'll go first. I think the matchup I'm going to watch and I'm probably most interested in, you know, the obvious one's going to be Beverly and Harden, right? Or Beverly and Russ. I think it's probably, what most people would say. I think what I would say for a Houston's point of view, I think the most important matchup for them would be PJ Tucker on Kawhi Leonard. If they can keep, you know, Kawhi's gonna have his games no matter what, right? He's gonna play really, really well no matter who's guarding him. But if they can force him to take those, you know, he's really good in the mid range, but if they can force him to take tough contested mid range jumpers, then they've had a decent, they've done their job defensively. But if Kawhi is comfortably playing where he wants to play, and he's taking, you know, pull up three pointers, and he's doing what he's most effective at doing, like then they've lost that matchup. I think PJ Tucker on Kawhi Leonard is Houston's most important matchup. What about you? How does it work the other way in your opinion?
We know the stars in this series are going to get their own. I mean, you can't shut these guys down.
No.
Westbrook's going to get his, whether he's shooting 11 of 25 or 11 of 15. Same with Harden. He's going to get to the line. He's going to get his numbers. Paul George, same. Kawhi Leonard, same. I think when you look at sort of the first other guy in the starting unit anyways, Robert Covington and Marcus Morris, both are sort of streaky shooters. Robert Covington has his games where he can go, I think, maybe like 5 of 7, and then I've also seen him go like 0 of 4, 0 of 5. And that really, really hurts, makes or breaks the Rockets. And same with the Clippers. You look at the game they lost against the Lakers, it was a close one, and Marcus Morris was 0 of 9. It was just one of those games where you just can't buy a bucket. So I think both can hold their own defensively, both can contribute offensively, but if their three-point shooting is going down, I think that'll be pretty instrumental to each team's success. Now, I mean, there's so many other matchups you could look at. You mentioned Beverly and Westbrook. I think whoever James Harden is guarding, probably be Paul George oftentimes, is an interesting one as well. But like we said, those guys are going to get their numbers, whether they're being defended by the best player or the worst player. So I think Marcus Morris and Robert Covington, if I had to choose non-star matchups, that would be an interesting one, just because whatever other guy can contribute, that would be just a huge boost to their teams.
By the way, I don't mean to dismiss how interesting of a matchup whoever the hell Patrick Beverley is going to guard is. Like, that's always going to be an interesting matchup.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is you would think the Clippers would put him on, you know, Russell Westbrook, but they've put him on Harden pretty consistently, and he's done a really good job. The thing is, he has a tendency to over-foul when he's guarding Harden. I think he's gotten fouled out 3 times, or has he gotten fouled out? Did he get fouled out in that last game? I don't remember.
He fouled out once, twice, and let's see, the third time he also fouled out. Yeah, he fouled out 3 times this year. The other one was the blowout win in Houston.
Right. So he's fouled out a lot when guarding Harden. And, you know, for those 19 to 20 minutes that he's playing, he's obviously doing a really good job. But the Clippers need Patrick Beverley to stay in the game for 25 to 30 minutes per game in the playoffs, especially against this specific team, because he could really be a really effective, you know, weapon against the Rockets. But yeah, that's also, I don't mean to dismiss how interesting of a matchup that is.
Yeah, Beverley is unique. He knows, you know, I don't know if you remember this game against the Utah Jazz last year where the Clippers played, I believe it was the Jazz, yeah. And I think the Jazz just got matched up with the Houston Rockets in the playoffs. I think it was the last game of the season. And you could see at center court, Patrick Beverley was giving advice to Jay Crowder about how to defend James Harden. You could see him do the hooking motion and sort of the defensive slide motion. And that's, I think, one reason why we'd really see Pat on Harden, is because he played with him for 4 years. He knows, or 3 or 4 years, whatever it was. And he knows all his antics. He knows for the most part what Harden likes to do, how he likes to get to his spots. And obviously you can't stop Harden, but you can do what you can to make it difficult for him to get to his spots. I think Patrick Beverley's his basketball IQ is not talked about a lot, but he's a very smart player. You watch him before the game in the locker room. He's got headphones on. He's locked into his iPad. I've seen him call over players who are sort of, you know, taking it easy pregame, and he's like, yo, you know, when they come off this screen, this is what you got to do. You got to trap one time. You got to do this one time. And it's just like he is just locked in and he's watching everything. He's holding everyone accountable as well. And so I think that when you look at who he's going to defend, Harden would be a really fun matchup to watch. That would be and Harden's never, you know, I think even when Westbrook made his comment about Pat Bev trick y'all, Harden sort of defended him saying, you know, Beverly plays hard. He plays good defense, plays hard. So I think there's a respect factor there too as well. So you know, I tried to ask Beverly once about Harden's antics, and he said, no, they're not antics. He's an MVP caliber player. He's really good at what he does. He's a great freaking scorer. And so there's mutual respect there as well. So I expect no love lost on the court, but there is love between them. So,
oh, for sure. Like, these guys were brothers when they were in Houston together. Pretty inseparable. And I don't expect that to change, even if these guys play a 7-game series against each other. But on the court, you're right. It does not matter. You know, it's interesting. I actually disagree with the idea that Russell Westbrook can't be shut down for a series, because I think you can get into his head, and I think you saw that in that Utah series in terms of Thunder Jazz from a couple years ago when Westbrook got really locked in on Rubio, and he let that matchup get in his head, and he let the fact that Rubio would have these awesome games get in his head, and then he would, you know, I'm not sure if you remember that press conference where he was like, I'm going to shut that down. And the
yes,
next game,
yes, of course,
he zoned in on Rubio, and he got beat. He got killed for it because he made that the center of his focus instead of the series as a whole. And I think you really can take Westbrook out for a series. And Beverly is one of the players I think you can do that with if the Clippers, you know, decidedly make that shift. Which it will be interesting if they do make that shift, because as you said, he knows Harden better than anyone on the court. Who guards Westbrook for a seven game for this series is interesting. If the Clippers decide to throw someone else other than Westbrook, I'd want to know who that's going to be.
So I just don't think they'll have one guy. That's the thing that I've noticed about the Clippers. They don't have one guy they want to designate on someone. Obviously, early in the regular season, you had a guy like Mo Harkless. You didn't want to tire out Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, so you threw Mo Harkless on point guards. But they can alternate between Pat, between Paul George, between Kawhi Leonard. Those are all three really great options. If you had to pick a fourth option, a decent one, Reggie Jackson's length is interesting. He's also a former teammate of Russell Westbrook's from OKC. Again, not going to shut Westbrook down, but I think he can give him some issues. The only reason I say you can't shut down Westbrook is because this new play style gives him so much room on the court that I feel like he can get his at certain points in the game. Whereas before, I think, you know, when you look at who was in that series, it was Russ, it was PG, who was their third best player, like
Steven Adams.
Andre Roberson or Steven Adams.
Yeah,
I just don't know if it's a different play style, which is why I just don't think you can shut Westbrook down completely anymore. But you know, we only saw a month of this small ball, so maybe teams figure it out. Maybe a team like the Clippers figures it out down the stretch and in the playoffs. But just basing off the way they were playing, I just think it'd be really hard to shut down Westbrook. I think you can force him into like a, you know, 10 of 25 shooting night, which I think you take as a defense, you know, 10 of 30, 11 of 30, whatever it is. I think you can take that as a defense. I just don't think you can shut him down completely.
Here's a question. How small do you think the lineups get? And what I mean by that is, like, I think the Rockets in the regular season have tried to keep it at 8 to 10 guys. But I think in the playoffs, like guys like Jeff Green, guys like Thabo Sefolosha, like guys like that are going to follow the rotation pretty quickly. Who for the Clippers do you think is going to fall out, or do you think anyone's going to fall out? Do you think the Clippers will keep it tight, or do you think the Clippers will try to play the same unit they did in the regular season? It's basically who can't play in this series, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it might be Zubac in that you have to really watch. If they play him off the court, he might not play more than 10 minutes a game. But I can see them going 9, 10 deep. Just because you have Landry Shamet, who went through a big playoff series last year against the Warriors. He's capable. Reggie Jackson's been through his battles. He's capable. Lou Williams is capable. Montrezl Harrell is capable. Jermichael Green held his own last year as well. He's capable. And so I think that, you know, when they were healthy, they won the 9 games when they were healthy, and they were, I think, 6-0 until losing to the Lakers. At full health, they were 6-0 or 7-0, whatever it was. And so I just think that they're deep enough, and they have enough veteran leadership with each unit that they can hold each other accountable and play 10 deep. Now, I might be completely wrong about that. Doc Rivers might just yank Zubats early, might not play Landry Shamet as much. We've seen him be a little short leash with Landry's minutes. But he's been so crucial to the second unit because his floor spacing is incredible. You can't leave him open or he's going to make you pay. So I think this team can easily go 9 to 10 deep in the playoff series. I don't think they trim it that much, especially the way they match up against the Rockets with both the first and the second units.
Yeah, and coaches are pretty coy about their lineups in the regular season. And once you get to the postseason, you see them shut that down really quick. Like,
right,
I remember last year you saw immediately Steve Kerr go to Andre Iguodala starting for the Warriors against the Rockets. They did not mess around. They didn't go to anybody else. They didn't let any center play on the court. And I think there's a possibility you get that with Doc. Doc likes to play a long rotation. I've noticed that. And it'll be interesting to see if he can do that. I think Reggie Jackson could potentially be one of those guys that it's really hard to play. But who knows? I mean, defensively, like, the Rockets aren't really that impressive. Maybe Reggie Jackson is so good offensively that you're capable of playing him. It's hard to predict without seeing
Reggie was one of those guys I thought was sort of like a regular season addition, just to give Lou some you know, take some weight off his shoulders, take some weight off Pat's shoulders, playmaking wise, because they were bringing the ball up a lot. I asked both Lou and Pat about that, and they're like, "Yo, this guy's taking a lot of weight off of us. You know, he's able to rebound, he's able to lead the break himself, he's able to playmake, and it's allowing us to just do our thing, not consume as much energy to do our thing, if that makes sense." So, yeah, he may have just been a regular season play, but I think the Clippers are also a team that's sort of built in that, you know, game one it might be Ivica Zubac who has 15 and 12. Game two, it might be Reggie Jackson, who has 15 points, 8 assists off the bench. Landry Shamet might have a big game three. It's not going to be the same guy all the time. And I think that's where they're dangerous. And I think that's where, to your point, they could go 8 deep instead of 10 deep. But each game, it'll be sort of someone different making an impact, whether it's the first unit or second unit.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to see me criticize the Clippers team very much, to be honest. I love this roster makeup. Like, this roster is just so hard to dislike. And you go up and down the roster. Like, each guy contributes something. But that brings me to my next question, because it does get interesting who the Clippers really lean on in crunch time. Because I remember when the Rockets were this deep, like 2 years ago, when they won 65 games, you would see a different crunch time lineup every single time. And I'm wondering if the Clippers are that kind of team, or do you see a clear five kind of shape out there?
I've been asked this before, and I haven't seen enough crunch time Clippers to really know, especially when they're healthy.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, there's so many options. That's the thing, because Zubac likely isn't going to play down the stretch, but if you need a big man who can defend the rim, you can play him. Way I've seen it is if the Clippers are ahead, they'll play Patrick Beverley because they want to hold their lead. But if they're down in crunch time, they'll play more Lou Williams, more Reggie Jackson, because they need more offense. That being said, I think Beverly's too good to not play in crunch time. So I think you'd have to go with, you know, Kawhi, PG, Beverley, probably Montrezl Harrell. And even, that's when it gets complicated, because you can mix and match so many different lineups, so many different guys. You can go micro ball to match the Rockets up and just put like Kawhi at center to match PJ Tucker if you want, or you can put up Montrezl Harrell and Marcus Morris, you know, in there late. So last shot, I mean, obviously it's got to be Kawhi Leonard taking the last shot, I think. I mean, if it comes down to it, but. Again, I think so much of their game works on a bit of ball movement, so that it won't always be Kawhi looking to score. He can, but if you remember that, I think it was November game between the Clippers and Rockets. The Rockets had a 6-point lead with about a minute left, and it was a corner three from Lou Williams, a wing three from Paul George, and a mid-ranger from Kawhi to take the lead over PJ Tucker. So it was like anyone could give you a bucket whenever you need it. So I don't think there's like one guy on this team, which I think is another thing that makes him really hard to defend. Lou Williams, if he's hot, you can't stop that guy. Paul George, before he suffered the hamstring injury, he was shooting, I think, 40% from three on 10 attempts, which is insane. That's really good. And Kawhi is Kawhi. We've seen what he can do in the playoffs. So I wish we saw more of this team, because I don't know what kind of lineups they want to use in crunch time. When they were healthy, they were blowing teams out, unfortunately. So not too much we can work with on that end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't hear you mention the guy I was really looking at. Like, Jamichael Green seems like an obvious kind of foil to what the Rockets are doing, in that you can also play micro ball with like four wings with the Clippers, because they have such versatility when you have George, Leonard, Green, even Morris to some extent. When you play all those guys at once, you have such versatility and such length. Like, you're not sacrificing length when you're playing micro ball with the Clippers. You are with the Rockets.
Right.
You're not with the Clippers. Like, the Clippers are big and small at the same time.
Yeah, Jermichael is a guy who, I mean, if you need to space, you know, floor spacing out there late in the game and solid defense, he can give that to you. I think he really impressed last postseason when he took on Kevin Durant. And you're not going to stop KD, but he held his own. He kept up with KD's footwork. He stayed in front of him as best he could, and really impressed me. And I think a lot of fans were surprised by how he was able to do that. And so obviously that's why they re-signed him. He hasn't found a spot in the rotation consistently because of the injuries. They've needed more offense, so they've played more Trez at times. But he'd been on a good roll before the season came to a pause, just because when they were healthy, like I said, they were able to go first five and then second five, just sort of right away. There's no starters with that second unit. They put Reggie Jackson, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, JaMychal Green in there, and Landry Shamet. And those five just go out there, you know, three guards, obviously, and not a traditional big man, but they can floor they can space the floor out. They can cause some problems. Yeah, I mean, I didn't name JaMychal Green, but there's so many options there. JaMychal Green is perfect, I think, for what the Clippers want to do against the Rockets. But so are so many guys. If you want to cause some havoc defensively inside with Montrezl Harrell or Ivica Zubac, there's so many different options. It kind of sucks that we weren't able to see them play more crunch time games at full health.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to hurt them in the playoffs. I think they're more than capable of throwing out a five. I think this is a problem Doc Rivers would like to have, right? But, you know, you look at the roster, and I think there's a distinct possibility we never see Kawhi guard Harden in this series. Like, not once. I think there's a real possibility that the Clippers never have to use that. Like, do you think we'll ever see that? Because you look at the defenders the Clippers have, and I think they'll start games with Beverly on him, and I think you'll see George get some time on him. I think you'll see Green get some time on him. I think you'll see even Shamet. I think I could see potentially guarding Harden. I think there's a distinct possibility we see a Clippers Rocket series where Kawhi never guards Harden. Do you even see that as a possibility?
It's possible. I don't think it's probable, just because the Clippers want to throw multiple looks at Harden and Westbrook, as many as possible, just to not give them the same look and get comfortable doing one thing.
I don't think they'll need player. To, is what I'm saying. Like,
so you think Beverly and George will be enough?
Well, that's what's interesting, because lately you've seen teams with Kawhi not put him on the best player. And
so they've actually started putting Kawhi on the best player right away. In this sort of six-game win streak they had before the hiatus, they put him on Devin Booker to start, Ja Morant to start, just the opposing team's best guard is who they put him on. And he was really causing some issues for them. And so I don't know. Obviously, a playoff series is different. But it'd be hard for me to believe that he doesn't guard Harden at all. I think they throw him here and there.
It's just my wild prediction that I just want to see how much time, if any, Kawhi gets on Harden, because again, the Clippers are one of those teams where, like, you don't need that luxury. Like that. That's how wealthy this team is with defensive versatility. They have They have so many capable guys to guard Harden. And if they want to, they might never have to use that option. But I mean, in crunch time, you know, it's very possible. We will see it. We'll see. The big question: who wins and how many games? I guess you go first, and I'll end it.
I would say the Clippers having home court advantage. I would say Clippers in six. I do think the Rockets don't go down easily, but It'll be one of those close six game series, you know, with a tight point differential. Won't be more than 30 or something, 25-30. But I think the Clippers win this one in six. I don't see the Rockets giving him a game seven. I just don't see it.
I have the same exact thing. I have Clippers in six. This is still my team to win the title, man. I just the more I talk about this team, the more I watch them, I just can't get over their roster makeup. Like, they built this team so beautifully. And I think going into the playoffs, they're able to match up with any team. And I think, you know, the reason they're not having the same point differential or net rating that teams like the Lakers and Bucks have is because they're resting a lot of their guys. You're not seeing a fully healthy Clippers team that often. You're not they don't get the opportunity to get in rhythm and get those high blowouts like the Lakers and Bucks have. And I think if they had played all season with a not resting lineup, I think you would see the Clippers have a net rating that's up there with the Bucks and the Lakers. I really do think at full health, this is the best team in the NBA.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, that's just how I feel about this team. I really feel like I can't see a team that matches up versatility-wise with them. Maybe the Bucks. The Bucks are one team I don't want to dismiss.
Right. I will say, though, that the Clippers have only played 11 games at full health this year. Paul George suffered, he missed the beginning of the season due to the shoulder surgeries he had. Missed the first, I think, 10 or 11. Suffered a hamstring strain. And suffered two more hamstring strains after that, actually. And so I think when you look at that, they just haven't had proper time to play together. They played 11 of their 64 games at full health, and they went 10-1 in those games. The only loss being a loss to the Lakers just before the NBA hiatus started. So Kawhi missed 8 games due to load management. 3 were due to injury, so Pat Bev had a couple injuries as well. Lou Williams, so they were pretty banged up all year. I think they were just starting to get healthy and play together before the NBA came to a pause. I think that's one of the biggest sort of bummers we had, is that the Clippers finally got healthy, and now we can't see them play. So I think fully healthy Clippers in 6 would be able to beat the Rockets. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if it was one of those. Remember the Cavs-Pacers series from a few years ago? Not the Oladipo-LeBron one, but the Paul George-LeBron one, where it was a 4-game sweep, but it was like a 16-point differential in total, where every game was like a 2-point win, 3-point win, something like that.
No, I remember. Yeah, it got really feisty in those first 3 games, particularly.
Yeah, I think it could be something like that between these two teams, where it could be like Clippers win in 5 but it's like a 15-point differential in total, where the Clippers won each game by like 2 points or something, and it went right down to the wire. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that either.
No, I agree. Like, I think this would be a really fun series. Like, I say Clippers in 6, and at the same time, I don't want to dismiss the Rockets, because I think the Rockets have a potential to make this series really, really exciting. And really exciting in a way where, like, mid-series, we may not know who wins, even though before the series, we had a pretty good idea it was the Clippers.
Yeah, I really wanted to see the Rockets' small ball work in the playoffs, because the only time I've seen a team do this is, when people do it in 2K, in my team, and they just put out a bunch of guards, a bunch of forwards, and they just run the game. And so to see it in real life on an NBA team, I really wanted to see the playoffs, in part just to see how the Rockets would fare. Could they create some crazy matchup problems and come out of nowhere to make a nice run in the West? Or would it just backfire completely? I hope we get a playoffs to find out.
Yeah, and one of the big questions I had before the NBA hiatus started was, like, what if this team wins the title? How does that affect roster constructions for NBA teams in the future? Like, do other teams try to emulate this, right? Like, do other teams decide, we don't need a Zubac anymore. We can just play our best 5 guys every single time down the floor. We don't even need this big man out here. Like, we can just go look for versatility, look for playmakers and floor spacing at all times, and that's the best way to build NBA teams from now on. That's a bummer for me too. So you mentioned that the Clippers had just started to get rolling before the hiatus. Do you think this hurts or helps them if the playoffs were to start, let's just say, in June?
I think it hurts them. I think it hurts a lot of teams. But I think chemistry and flow to a game is something you can't just bring back up after a long break. Forget the whole getting into games hip and all that stuff. Just having a feel for one another. Again, they've only played 11 games fully healthy, and I think 5 or 6 of them came before the break. So getting that feel for one another is huge. Teams like the Bucks, teams like the Lakers had it. Teams like the Rockets even had it. The Clippers were getting there. So I don't know. I think they are affected by that. I think you see them, if the season does resume in June, I think you see them come out of the gate a little slower than other teams. You see them try to figure each other out again on where they like the ball, where spots on the floor, and then go from there. But, you know, in terms of teams coming back from the hiatus, I feel like the Rockets, the Bucks, and the Lakers have an advantage because just because they've been healthy for the most part and they've been playing together for a while. So, but that's not to say the Clippers wouldn't figure it out. I think they'd figure it out within a week. But, I mean, do they pick it back up with the playoffs and no regular season? That's going to bring up some really ugly basketball the first couple of days.
Yeah, and I think if you ask players around the league, I think they would all prefer a runway up to the playoffs, but they may not have that luxury. Like it may just be like a take it or leave it kind of thing. Like if you want to finish this season off, we may just have to start in the playoffs, which would create possibly the ugliest first round in NBA history.
Right.
But it's one of those things where, hey, get that revenue. Like if you have any possibility, if you have any way to complete the season to get that revenue, forget ugly basketball. We want the salary cap to remain as intact as we possibly can.
Well, two things though. I think you can throw in a week just to of like two games maybe, just to get guys back into shape. The biggest thing is looking at injuries and guys obviously are playing at a level they hadn't played in months. So injury is going to be a big factor there. Another thing is whoever wins the title, if they do bring the season back up, do they have like an asterisk next to them at the end of the year? Is there like a question mark behind that? Like, oh, they won it during the coronavirus year.
It's possible. I mean, I personally wouldn't give the team an asterisk because I just think winning an NBA title is just an unbelievable feat no matter how you win it. But I do think a lot of people would view that title a lot differently, kind of in the same vein you view a lockout title, right? We have nothing to compare this to, so I don't really know how other people would react to it. But I do think the vast majority of media, the vast majority of players, the vast majority of front office members, they all want the season to continue in some form, shape, or fashion. But it's really a matter of logistics and a matter of how, when, can you know, is this curve going to slow down? Or, as we mentioned earlier in the podcast, are we going to get a second wave of coronavirus? We have no idea. There's just so many unknowns. But hey, we got a solid podcast out of it. Hopefully we do get Rockets Clippers in the second round. Hopefully this is a series. Hopefully we can refer back to this podcast when previewing this series. And hopefully I see you down the road and we can, you know, meet in person and do another podcast possibly.
I hope so. Thank you very much for having me. Just having basketball back would be amazing. So at this point, I'd settle for anything. Like even this 2K tournament's entertaining. Like I what else is there on? You know, like I've watched enough movies and TV shows. I need something sport related. So, but yeah, if it does come back, hopefully we see each other down the line. Bring this podcast back up. Bring back some of our takes. See if we're right or wrong. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting. And yeah, thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
For sure, man. Stay healthy. All right, that was Tomer Azarli of Clutch Points. You can follow him on Twitter at Tomer Azarli. You'll find his @ in the description of this podcast. Make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoyed the show. We're going to continue the series. We're going to continue podcasting throughout this hiatus. I told you guys I would not slow down, and I will continue that. We're going to continue our Rockets Rewind series the next episode, and I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. All right, guys. Good night.